Welcome to my mommy's podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Wellness. That's wellness with an E on the end. The brand I co-founded when I realized there just weren't truly natural alternatives to some personal care products that performed as well as many conventional brands. We've been sharing our popular toothpaste and hair care for almost 2 years, but today I'm excited to tell you about a new star in our lineup. The charcoal toothpaste that provides the same mineral-rich benefits as our original whitening formula with a boost of charcoal for extra whitening and mouth-supporting benefits. It's made without glycerin, using oral microbiome-friendly ingredients to help your body create stronger, healthier, whiter teeth while you sleep. I love to use charcoal and whitening toothpaste on alternating days to keep my teeth looking and feeling their best. You can check out our toothpaste and all of our products at wellness.com. That's WellNesse.com. This podcast is sponsored by Bio Optimizers, and specifically their Magnesium Breakthrough product, which is their organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium. Listen, if you feel stressed or have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep or never feel fully rested, one of the best things you could possibly do is start getting enough magnesium. I have been writing about magnesium for years, and that's because the body needs it for over 300 reactions. Yet the majority of us don't get anywhere near enough, and things like stress, caffeine, lack of sleep, and even certain foods can deplete us even further. But don't just run into the store and buy the first magnesium you find. Most magnesium supplements only use one or two of the cheapest synthetic forms. And since they're not full spectrum, they won't help your magnesium deficiency or help you sleep any better. There are actually 7 forms of magnesium, and for best results, you need all of them if you want to experience the full calming, sleep-enhancing effects. And that's why I'm taking Magnesium Breakthrough by Bio Optimizers. You just take 2 capsules before you go to bed, and you'll be amazed at the effect it has on your stress, how much better you sleep, how much more rested you feel when you wake up, and you'll have so much more energy to enjoy your family the next day. I've had trouble with certain magnesium supplements over the years, and this is one that I feel a big difference from right away. For an exclusive offer just for you, go to magbreakthrough.com/wellnessmama and use the code wellnessmama to save 10% on Magnesium Breakthrough. So again, that's magbreakthrough.com/wellnessmama and the code wellnessmama. Hello and welcome to the Wellness Mama podcast. I'm Katie from wellnessmama.com and wellness.com. That's wellness with an E on the end. And this episode is all about the gut and specifically what Donna Gates calls your body ecology. I'm here with Donna Gates, who is an international best-selling author of a book called The Body Ecology Diet. And I can't believe I haven't actually had her on before. She has been in this world for 25 years, and she's been on a mission to change the way the world eats and also to really delve into a lot of aspects of health that relate to the gut. In this episode, we go deep on a whole lot of different topics, including her own health struggles that led her into this field, what the body ecology diet is, how yeast is often an underlying issue in many health problems, how this led to crossover research that ended up helping many families with autism as well, the surprising way she uses enemas with surprising results, a few practical tips for helping avoid colic and sleep problems in babies. And then we talk about specifics like, can people with histamine issues eat fermented foods? What about the oxalates? And a lot of other directions from there. So we get pretty specific, and she gives a lot of very practical tips, and I learned a lot. So let's join Donna. Donna, welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Katie, for asking me. I have been a fan and a subscriber of Wellness Mama for at least 4 years, and I'm always, you know, have my antennas up for cool podcasts that you have on, guests that you have on. So now I'm one of them. So thank you.
Well, I'm excited we finally get to chat. I've followed your work for a long time as well. And honestly, I can't believe we haven't had this conversation sooner, but I'm excited to jump in today. And I would guess quite a few of our listeners have already heard of you. But for those who haven't, I know you're an expert in the fields of digestive health and nutrition. And I would love to hear a little of your background, how you got started on this path.
Well, I got started like many, many of us do because I was super sick. I obviously, looking back, I never was fed properly. I grew up in the South with a lot of, you know, fat, a lot of vegetables, but they had fat back in them. For my body, that was not good. And the real triggering thing that happened was that I the skin broke out. It wasn't detoxifying efficiently, and so my skin broke out, and my mother took me to the dermatologist, of course, and they gave you in those days very high doses of antibiotics and birth control pills. So it would be years later before I figured that what was really, really wrong with me was that I had now a systemic yeast infection. But along with that, digestive problems and no energy. I mean, I look back and I think, how did I even make it through being a young mother, having babies and all that with no energy? I just faked it, you know. I faked it because I wanted to be a good mom and all and have a good life. And I never stopped looking for answers. Like, I always had my feelers out for anything. And I actually studied a whole bunch of different disciplines. I went to Japan and studied with Lee Masawa for, and got certified there. And then I was macrobiotic for 8 years. And that was a lot because I learned a lot about certain foods that we didn't have here, and also Chinese medicine, which I became really interested in. I spent a year studying acupuncture, and I thought, you know, that's not right for me. There's something else I need to pursue and go after. But, you know, I did everything, huge amounts of supplements, raw foods, food combining, everything that was available. I did it for a while, and so I learned a lot, and some things worked, helped to a certain degree, but because I really wasn't addressing the root cause, I really never, ever got well. And then finally, very fortunately, I met Dr. William Crook at a conference out in LA, and he was just introducing his book and signing it there. And fortunately, I had some time with him sitting out in the lobby around a fountain, and he started asking him questions. And he said to me, you know, we don't think, his book, by the way, was called The Yeast Connection. And it just was an amazing person. He never stopped trying to get the word out about yeast. So he said, you know, we do not, meaning Orion Truss, his friend, and I don't think that there is a cure for this condition. And in my naivety, I said, oh, there has to be, and I'm going to find it. So I did everything he said to do in the book, but it was, you know, closer, but not there. So I took all those years of learning about basic principles like acid alkaline, yin and yang, which I call the expansion contraction principle of balance. You know, I put it all together and I created this whole new world. And I always felt behind me, amazingly, was some kind of power, because I kept finding information, kept planning to write a book to help other people. But it wouldn't finish. Like, every time I think, okay, now I'm done, a whole piece of information would show up that I had to put in there. And so 4 years later, I finally put out the Body Ecology Diet. And then by word of mouth, it spread everywhere. I mean, health food stores carried it back then, and lots of people that worked there were recommending it. It worked, you know. The book was called The Body Ecology Diet. But body ecology is more than just a diet. So I've gone on to, over these years, more than 25 years, and have continued to delve deeply into yeast infections. And of course, there was not any information hardly out there, but now there is a lot. And then just because I have this experience of a lot of years, you know, when you find something, you can kind of synthesize it and tie it in and start connecting more and more dots. But what's frustrating for me is that I see how very, very important it is to conquer yeast infection. And I also see that in tests, like the organic acid tests, for example, practitioners are seeing yeast shows up all the time, probably all the time, but along with mold too. You know, they're both fungus, different though, and the toxins they produce. So here's this thing called candidiasis, yeast infections, and I don't find that anybody's taking them seriously enough. And if they really understood what they're doing and how impossible it is to get rid of them, and how strict you have to be in the beginning, and how they're tied to so many other things that are wrong. You know, I always love a chance to talk about yeast infections.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot more resources now than there used to be, and a lot more knowledge about this. But for someone who, I mean, I would guess a lot of people are limited to the idea of yeast infection in maybe the context of like a vaginal yeast infection. But this is obviously something that can be very systemic and affect many other parts of the body. So how might someone know if they have an underlying yeast issue? And then maybe what are a couple of the broad steps to start dealing with it?
Well, I think one of the best ways is to know your history. Like, have you had antibiotics, birth control pills, for example? Have you been raised on a lot of sugar in your diet? So the history for sure. The organic acid test will confirm it. And then you're right, Katie, that a lot of women have told me, well, I don't have a yeast infection. They're thinking only of a vaginal yeast infection. They don't realize that it's systemic, meaning that it has left the gut and the vagina. Well, you know, what's in the gut can move into the vagina too. But, you know, it's left the gut because they took antibiotics for a little while or a long while, like I did for years for my skin. And so you get this yeast moving from the gut, causing a great deal of inflammation and what people call today leaky gut. So it's very permeable. And then it very easily moves into the body and colonizes everywhere. Like if they know for sure, like if people have had any kind of transplant surgery or a hip replacement or a heart valve or something, those colonize almost immediately with yeast. And diabetics, their blood sugar is always out of control. They'll always have a yeast infection. Anyone with cancer has a yeast infection. It's just this really important thing that it must be so common. And you hear that it is a normal inhabitant of the body. So I think people just kind of shrug their shoulders and dismiss it and don't realize what it's doing. And, you know, it's also connecting the dots. Like, you can't just read a research article. That's what happened years ago when I was writing the book and discovering all this information about this world in our gut that wasn't called the microbiome. Then it was called the inner ecosystem. I called it. I came up with that name because I wanted to tell people, look, there's a world of microbes inside of us, and they're super important. We're missing that. We're going off to explore outer space and deep into the ocean. But guess what? Anyway, but here's the thing. I would go out there, searching, and there was tons of information that microbiologists had out there telling about microbes, different kinds of microbes. And they were just reporting all their research to each other, and nobody was making use of it. So I thought, look, this is important. We need to know about this. So that's how I got into that. I mean, by the time the book came out, it was the first ever to talk about this world in our gut, to stevia. We didn't have stevia at that time. We had aspartame, NutraSweet and Equal, which Monsanto wanted us to use all the time. Very bad side effects. I found stevia, and it was an interesting story too, but I just felt so blessed and guided at times. Doors would open, opportunities would come up. So, you know, by the time the book came out, I had a lot of information. I had a chapter on stevia and how important it was to be sugar-free, and here's how to use it. And at that time, we just had the powder, but then I then moved to a liquid because it's way easier to work with the liquid than the little fine white powder, which looks kind of like cocaine.
I remember those early days of stevia as well and how much there are so many better options now. And I know that anytime we're talking about the gut, obviously that has rollover effect into the entire body. And from following your work, I know that you've also jumped into the world of autism. And there are, of course, many families who are working through that and that you do a lot of work in this area as well. So I'd love to hear how that connection happened and then maybe some specifics of what you learned.
Okay, so I think a lot of times the reason things manifest for us is we have this heart desire, you know, to want to do something. And I majored in child development in college and really always had this very, very worried feeling about the future for our children. So I just kind of, if there's any way I could make a difference, I wanted to. And so then I heard about this thing called autism that was starting to, you know, show up in the world. And I had an opportunity, I was living in Atlanta, to go to a conference right there. It was probably the first or second one that the DAN, Defeat Autism Now group, they're not the same doctors that started it, but they were amazing. And they all had children with autism and they didn't want to give their kids drugs. And so they were looking for answers. But what they had done was they'd done a really good job, in my opinion, of identifying what the symptoms were. What did the kids have besides obviously brain, you know, lots of things happening with their brain. They had gut problems, big times, diarrhea, constipation. You know, there's pictures of them smearing their feces all over the wall. Oh, and then they said they had yeast problems. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Gut and yeast are my two kind of somewhat specialties. And so I'm going to see if I can help. So I put it out there. Nobody came for about a year. And then somebody showed up with a little boy, and he was almost three. And I said, well, I don't know for sure, but I had to learn, you know, what's going on. And she taught me. And then she shared with me everything that happened, and I shared what I would do. And so his name is Thomas, and today he goes to the South Carolina to a university there, and he's a top student, and he has been for a really, really long time. So he's been well, within a year, he was well. So his mom was real excited, obviously, and she told all of her friends, look what I'm doing, it's working for Thomas, and nobody was cared. They just wanted to go to the doctor and give him drugs or whatever, and kind of accepted the diagnosis as if it was hopeless. But so she's very upset about it. And I went to I think it was probably an A4M conference, and then some conference, I don't remember, but there were other mothers. And if I found out that they had children with autism, that's why they were there, I invited them to join Diane and I for this, to join us in a group. So what happened was we ended up with Bedrock. They eventually named themselves Bedrock, which stands for Body Ecology Diet Recovering Our Kids. And eventually, over, to make a long story short, a couple of thousand parents and practitioners were members, and they were amazing at sharing feedback and sharing with other moms. And it just spread all over the world. I mean, there were people in Hong Kong and all over Europe, different parts of Europe and everywhere, that were doing it with good results. And then the doctors started seeing that, you know, the kids would go to these really good doctors, and the doctors would notice great improvements. So they realized that diet was important, because before that, they sort of thought maybe gluten-free, casein-free was maybe okay, but it only took people so far. And they didn't know yet anything about the gut, about fermented foods. And fermented foods were, one particular, the fermented coconut water, which I came up with this idea to ferment the coconut water because it was becoming popular, but it's full of sugar. So that was a great first thing to introduce, because first of all, it's easy to make. Well, it wasn't that easy to make. You had to open coconuts, it's a pain. Put the starter in, which I had, fortunately, at that time. Then you have to let it ferment, but you could hide it in anything, like their junky juice or whatever, and it started working. And then what happened was they started, because now we understand that, you know, they were fixing their gut, changing the environment of the gut, so the brain was getting better. So I would get emails like, I can't believe this, but my son crawled up on my lap and grabbed my broccoli. They only ate usually bread and pizza crust and bad stuff, lots of carbs. So, you know, and everybody learned and everybody shared. And I also added enemas into the program, because they are not good detoxifiers. That's one of the things going on that puts a child at risk for autism. And so it took me a while to get up the courage, because I thought they were really going to think I'm crazy talking about enemas, because this is like young, modern, you know, hip, very cool, very well-educated moms. And they don't even know what an enema is, I'm sure. But right away, some did it. Right away, they reported amazing changes, because they said, I can't believe what came out of my son. He hasn't been alive but 2 years, and look what's, and I mean, this stuff is incredibly toxic. Well, you know, didn't know as much as I do know today, but you see, we're making that all the time. And we're making those toxins, ammonia and all kinds of nasty stuff, and it's down in the gut. And so when you use an enema, you're rinsing that out. The kids, there would be stories about the kids would bring the enema bucket to their mom and ask for an enema because they felt so much better. And like one mom, you know, regularly did an enema with her son every week on Friday. It was sort of a routine. And she said that after like maybe the second or third month, she said one day he had this enormous bowel movement. And after that, today he's very well. And he was the oldest in our group. He was 10 years old, which is older. The earlier you can start to catch it and treat children, the much better chance you have of turning it around quickly.
Several follow-up questions to that. The first being with the enema, I feel like this, most people have probably at least heard of enemas. Maybe the majority probably have not tried them. So what's happening in the body when you do an enema? What makes that so beneficial?
Well, I actually, by the way, I figured moms are very uncomfortable. So I suggested that they start with themselves first, like buy an enema bucket. And they're only holding 2 quarts. And you, with a child, you use like maybe 2 cups. And the tube is very tiny and it's plastic and you can rinse it out and hang it up to dry. But wait, would you ask me that question again? Because I'm off on a tangent.
Yeah, just any like biologically, why is an enema so effective? And maybe also some guidelines around enema usage.
Okay, so effective because those toxins that are stored inside of us every single day that we're not eliminating are definitely poisoning the brain. The environment is really toxic. So if you're eating, for example, fermented vegetables, which have an amazing diversity to, you know, end up in the gut and change the environment, you know, you need to help them out a little bit by rinsing away the really toxic stuff. But and it's very easy to understand that, for example, because like, let's say you were the mayor of a city and you had this one nice area, location, it's a good location, but it's full of slums and crime and dangerous. And so you decide that you're going to move those people into light, nicer homes, but and then level that and clear it out and then start all over again. And so that's kind of what we're, that's definitely what we're doing. We're removing, you know, actually in functional medicine today, that is the first thing. You remove and then you repair the gut lining and then you replace or reinoculate healthy bacteria into the gut. You do have to remove those nasty toxins because it's impossible for the good guys to survive in that really toxic environment.
And you mentioned that the younger you were, like, started with someone with autism, that typically the easier the recovery was, which makes me think there is probably also a preventative aspect to this as well. And now with all these years of clinical experience, I'd love to hear, like, are there things that we can do as parents, even preconception while pregnant or with little children, to help kind of stack the odds in their favor?
Thank you for asking that, Katie. That's one of the reasons I love listening to your podcast. You always ask these great questions. But I would be lecturing at Autism One and places like that. And I kept trying to get this word out there that autism can be prevented. We need to be getting that message out in the world. We need to prevent it. It went from like 180 down, I mean, 1 in 180 down to 1 in 40 now. It's still getting worse. So things are not improving. And it's gotten to the point where people are accepting it. Doctors are treating it, but they're kind of, they're not making progress. And so it seems like they don't get really what they need to do, but you've got to start early there. You do have to detoxify and get those detoxification pathways open. And the prevention though is it's very real. Like, so since then there were always parents that said, you know, I'd like to have another child, but I'm afraid to have another one. Now, fortunately, many people have, and a lot of other people, women have come to me to ask for help. You know, I want to have a healthy baby right up front. And so I have something that I teach our mothers. They eat really well during the pregnancy. They eat the fermented foods during the pregnancy. That gives the right kind of microbes, for example, on the birth canal. But once the baby's made it safely into the world and you realize, you know, he's breathing well and everything, and bonded with mom and dad, which is super important, the next most important thing to start thinking about is how can we establish this important world in our baby's gut so that he can live safely in the world. You know, the world is full of pathogens and nature's got everything all figured out, obviously, or we wouldn't be here as human beings or other animals. These microbes that colonize our gut and our skin and so on, and our nasal and passages and lungs and everything, they're mostly beneficial. So right then and there, you wanna start the baby with the right kind of microbes in his gut. So the mothers have been eating fermented vegetables through the pregnancy, and I've encouraged them to, just the day after birth, to take the juice, dilute it, and take a little bit of it and drop it in the baby's mouth. Now, this absolutely means they're never going to have colic, which is a big deal because when a baby starts off life with, he's happy, he's bonding, mom and dad are not staying up all night, you know, like completely exhausted because they're getting up all the time. The baby's clearly in pain and you don't know what to do about it. Now you're setting the center ecosystem in place. Now, that is a good thing to do a couple of times. And then, and then the mom's eating the fermented vegetables, you know, the healthy bacteria in her breast milk. But also the other thing is bifidus is the main bacteria in a baby's gut. Like we have a product called a bifidus power blend, and I've encouraged moms to take just a little bit of it, you know, pump their breast milk and have a bottle and put some in there every day and give their baby the bifidus. My own daughter-in-law did that. The first baby she didn't do it with, and this second, her little girl who's just 5 months old now, she did do it, and she always remarks when I go over there how easy it is to raise her, how she sleeps from 8 to 8, how healthy, and you know, she's growing so well. The doctor always comments, that's what you want to do. And then obviously don't, these kids with a stronger immune system don't necessarily need to be rushed off for an antibiotic, which will immediately destroy their inner ecosystem. So another thing breastfeeding mothers need to know is right around 6 weeks, the baby will look like he or she's come down with a cold, and their little cheeks will get all red and rashy and everything. In Chinese medicine, this is the lungs. And that's an indication the lungs are now, you know, purifying. But, you know, to me, what I interpret that to be is the immune system has gone out now for its sort of first serious practice run to try, you know, for everybody, all the cytokines and all the interleukin, everything, you know, is now starting to practice to handle this maybe infection. It's just building the immune system. It's almost like a practice drill, perhaps, in a lot of ways. But of course, usually the mother doesn't know that. She's sure the baby's gonna, you know, die. She's gonna breathe or anything and scared to death. It's usually her first baby. And she'll rush them to the doctor, who happily gives them an antibiotic. And there we go. There goes the very important inner ecosystem. So if you interview the kids, you'll find out that most all of them have that kind of history. Gut problems from the get-go. The mother has a yeast infection. Here's another really important, you know, thing I've learned that I wish they do research on, is that, so a woman that's at that time was, say in her, she was just coming of childbearing age, and she, like my daughter, for example, I'm a baby boomer. So our baby boomers' daughters began having children. Well, when they were born, we didn't know everything I just told you. So we did take our baby to the doctor, and the doctor did give them an antibiotic, and they were handed out like candy, really. So that generation of women, the baby boomers' daughters, have yeast infections from the beginning. Now, what happens is, like many infections, you know, viral infections, yeast infections, and so on, we can pass those infections on to our kids. And people pass their yeast infection on. And so, you know, women will say to me, well, I didn't have a vaginal yeast problem, but, you know, they don't realize that when they're pregnant, their estrogen goes up, their progesterone goes way up, even the cortisol goes up. All these things are really important for the baby, but they happen to also be feeding the yeast. And so her minor yeast infection that she might have been keeping under control has now gotten more acute. And then her baby's likely to have come into the world with yeast infection. An example of that is cradle cap, for example, because that's a biotin deficiency, but the yeast consume biotin like crazy. So that, or diaper rash, if you see those signs, just, you know, start giving your baby the healthy probiotics and bifidus and all and build. So they outnumber the yeast, because the yeast are pathogenic, but they're in small numbers. And if you change the environment, they won't survive. If you have more of the good bacteria, they can't control the environment and cause the problem. So there's a solution, and there's this prevention. Now, there's a period of time where they kept saying, oh, it's genes, which really made me mad, because I thought, well, we all have certain genes. So they tested the kids, and they found out that most of them had, about 80% have MTHFR, which is methylation, or other things in the other genes in that cycle. Vitamin D receptors, really common, but it's really common, period, in everybody. So when you look at the genes, you see, okay, they have these genes. Yeah, but how about all these other people that have the genes and they didn't become autistic? I think certain things are going on. They're poor detoxifiers. They have more toxins in their system and they can't get them out. Yeast are making toxins, acetaldehyde, for example. It's a very nasty toxin that yeast produce, not mold, but yeast produce acetaldehyde. And so, you know, there's just a lot of strikes against the newborn baby, and we're not tying all these pieces together to help the kids get off to a really good start, reverse their destiny, so to speak. It's not genes, in my opinion, at all. Because, you know, now we know. So what if you have these genetic variants? They are, let's keep them from being expressed. And if they're not being expressed, they're really not that big of, not especially in children. They can be more of a problem when we get older and our DNA gets more damaged, but they really aren't. And a lot of them, you know, there's an antidote to that gene, vitamin D receptor. You want to check and see if the transporter gene that gets into, that carries the vitamin D, could it be that? You know, that we can look at those things today. We can get a much better picture of how to support them genetically. But I do not believe genes are the cause of autism.
Based on what I've seen, I would definitely agree with you. And I've had several functional medicine pediatricians on this podcast, and they all made the same statement, which is that the vast, vast majority, in fact, almost all, upwards of 90% of childhood illnesses don't need any kind of treatment whatsoever and will resolve without antibiotics, which I thought was a higher number than most parents talk about. And they explain fever is actually a good response in the body. You don't need to run straight to antibiotics and fever reducers. And to your point, those things are also damaging to the gut. And I know from reading your work, fermented foods are obviously, especially fermented vegetables, a big pillar of this. And from what I understand, you're actually a big part of the reason we can now find these things so widely available in stores today. But I think anytime we start talking about fermented foods, at least when I've written about them, I get questions related to a few specific things. The first being, what about if someone has a histamine issue? Can they still consume fermented foods?
Well, by the way, speaking of histamine, candida is a major cause of mast cell activation. You know, people with mast cell problems and all types of allergies and histamine, because the yeast produce acetaldehyde, a lot of it, 24/7. There's a gene, speaking of genes, there's a gene called ALDH, and it processes acetaldehyde, and it becomes totally overwhelmed completely if you have yeast in your body. So people with yeast infections are very histaminergic. You know what that, you can sort of tell me that words. In other words, they're very, very easily producing histamine. So that's super, super important to do that. And then I would say, you know, I would recommend at first, don't eat fermented foods. Let your bucket, so to speak, empty for a while, like maybe a month, 6 weeks or something. But here's the thing. The problem isn't the food that's high in histamine. It's sort of, you know, you don't want, like Body Ecology, our diet is based, it's, I mean, if I get a chance to explain it more, but I don't think you should eat a lot of high histamine, certain ones particularly, wave the red flag at the bull, just, you don't need a whole lot of high histamine foods. But the real problem, if you have histamine issues or mast cell, it's really the gut. You want to fix your gut. And there's a lot of help today in doing that. Functional medicine practitioners are really focused on that. And here's a very important myth I'd like to dispel, and that is that fermented foods are not all alike in any way. Some of them are super high histamine producers, like obviously beer and wine and kombucha, super histaminic. And then, you know, I would even say in the beginning, you don't want to have fermented yogurt or dairy. I would stay away from everything for a while. Then, however, I would start with fermented vegetables made the way I've been teaching people for a long time how to make, because there is one particular microbe, Lactobacillus acidophilus, that is a great histamine degrader. So if you make your fermented vegetables and add a starter, that's, you know, Lactobacillus acidophilus, that's what Plantarum is. It's called Plantarum. That's the acidophilus name. So you put a package of that into your brine and then mix that into your fermented vegetables and pack them in jars. That Plantarum grows out in vast numbers. It's there anyway because Plantarum, you can tell it comes from plants, but now you've got hundreds and hundreds of times more per CFU, per tiny little spoonful. And they then can degrade histamine. They are also antiviral. There's so many great things they do. They also degrade oxalates, for example. One of my favorite recipes, or what I like for people to make, is to take some, you know, they maybe go do red cabbage and beets and fennel or something, but the beets, which are very high in oxalates, by the way, but are really good for you. If you ferment them and put in the starter, all the oxalates are gone. And now you're eating the wonderful benefits of beets, producing that nitric oxide, good for circulation and heart and everything, but you don't have the oxalates. So fermenting is a good way to get rid of oxalates and foods that we would want to eat too. So there's so many benefits, but they're not all the same. And people are, you know, buying all these, I mean, waters with bacteria and everything added into them. They're not really medicinal either. I'm talking about the first place to start for sure is with fermented vegetables. See, they have incredible diversity in them. That's really key in conquering infections in the gut. They come in and they, so many different types. There's not just bacteria in there, they're phages. Phages are viruses that actually kill bad bacteria, you know, and they're really important. For every bacteria, there's 10 phages. They're on the planet in great numbers to control the bacteria, to keep them from getting out of hand. I kind of think of them as like policemen standing around, that if these, you know, somebody gets out of hand, they eat them up. But anyway, there's a lot of important things besides nutrients in our hands. But here's the thing. If we really understood the power of the gut and focused on that from the beginning of life, don't wipe it out, build your baby's immune system, and then he's not going to be sick all the time. You're not going to, you know, take him to the doctor who doesn't know any better and wipe out his inner ecosystem. Because, you know, we especially now with this COVID thing, we really, really want to have a strong immune system. I think people are aware of that. I don't think people realize that with COVID, you get a yeast infection. So everybody who's out there with a long hauler problem are going to have now high yeast, and other viruses are activated too. Epstein-Barr herpes viruses are now activated too. So it really gets back to, where do we start? We've got to have a healthy gut. And so no, I would say not in the very, very beginning, because people are so sensitive. But, you know, and I think a lot of people eat packaged foods. They eat foods that have been left out in the air, so bacteria grows on them. You really need things like fish, for example. You need to buy it, prepare it, eat it. Only buy enough to eat right then and there. Then if you add a scoop or two of fermented vegetables in the meal with the fish, they're going to degrade the histamine for you too. So they're really the antidote so often to things. Like, even I would say to somebody, well, I'm so mad I ate a cake last night, I'm feeling really bad. And I said, well, anytime that happens to you, just put in a couple of spoonfuls of fermented vegetables when you get home, because down in your gut, where it's all going to end up, those bacteria are going to eat the sugar and whatever from the cake. So they're an antidote often too for things.
And I'm so glad you touched on oxalates a little bit as well. I'd love to dive deeper in these, because I feel like maybe a lot of people don't have a full understanding of what they are and what's happening in the body and why. I believe in body ecology, you recommend a pretty low oxalate diet, but that doesn't necessarily mean a low vegetable diet at all. So can you explain more of the pieces of that equation and what oxalates are and how we can help consume them in a healthy way and mitigate too much of them?
Yeah, you know, a long time ago when I developed the diet and everything, I said like 20% animal protein, 80% vegetables. All these days, you know, years later, I would still stick to that. But I've refined it more. So you want to find out foods that are super high in histamine, foods that are suppressing the DAO enzyme, because that enzyme, it's a gene, you know, it's important for the DAO enzyme degrades histamine in the gut when we eat. And for example, coffee does. So don't have coffee with your meal. Black tea does, mate, and all these caffeinated drinks, they're suppressing that DAO enzyme, which is not good. So oxalates are, you know, in foods are lectins and oxalates, and, you know, there's components of the foods that could be a problem for us. They're not a problem if we have a healthy gut. So just looking at oxalates alone, they are in the food and they cause stones when they get into the body. They're supposed to be bound into the gut and gobbled up by a bacteria called Oxalobacter firmigenes. And this little guy, his only purpose in life is to eat oxalates. That's all he does. But wipe him out with an antibiotic or long-term antibiotic, and he's permanently gone. He's one of those missing microbes that Dr. Martin Blaser talks about. So now you're eating these foods thinking, oh, you know, these are good and healthy. They're well popular. Everybody recommending them. But you don't have anything to bind. Nobody's in there eating the oxalates up. So they cause stones. Once they get into the body, they're very well known for causing kidney stones, but they can cause stones anywhere. Like one research study I have shows that I think it was 65% of them end up in the bones, displacing stem cells, weakening our bones, for example. You would never know they were in there. So they can go anywhere and they cause pain. I've had people, for example, one man in his mid-40s, his father had terrible rheumatoid arthritis, and he knew he was heading in that direction because he was in pain all the time. But when I looked at what he ate, he was eating so many high oxalate foods, all these nuts and seeds and almond milk and spinach in the smoothie in the morning. So I said, well, start there. Don't eat those foods and, you know, eat these instead. There are plenty of others to eat. And so he emailed in about under 3 weeks and he said, it's amazing. I have no pain anymore. So you don't have to eliminate every single food that has oxalate in it because it's commonly in plant foods, but and never in animal proteins, never in dairy, but definitely in these plant foods, and but in varying amounts. So the ones that are super high are would be like spinach and turnip greens, chocolate, which is so popular, certain nuts and seeds like chia, which is real popular, is high, but flax seeds are not. So, but if you have fats like flax oil, for example, walnut oil or something like that. Walnuts are high, but the walnut oil is not high. So, you know, you're putting out the, when you press the oil, for example, you're pressing out the oxalates for the most part. But so on the body conscious diet, we had lots of, you know, vegetables, fermented vegetables right from the beginning. And then I had quinoa and millet in there because they're seeds, not grains. They're grain-like, and they provide fiber, which is really important for the healthy gut, which I think everybody knows that. But, you know, then when I found out, oh my gosh, they are high in oxalates. So I switched the method of cooking and tried to explain to people that you want to get a pot of water in the stove, get it boiling away, and then put your soaked quinoa in there, or you can buy sprouted quinoa today. That's the same thing. Already done for you. And so you just pour that into your boiling water and let it go for about 12 minutes. Not too long because you don't want it to get mushy. Then you take it off the heat, the quinoa settles to the bottom, and then you pour it through a strainer with tiny little holes. And it should be nice and fluffy and way lower in oxalates now. And for millet, you do the same thing, except you have to go about 15 minutes longer and then total and then drain it, you know, too. But it really makes a big difference to prepare foods. Sweet potatoes, which is really big in the paleo community, they're very, very high in oxalates. So same thing, you know, cut them up, put them in water, boil them. As far as the other potatoes go, the lowest in oxalates would be your red skin potatoes. And if you peel them, even more so. So you could like peel them, put them in a pot until they're soft, drain them. And then add some butter and parsley to them. And that's quite delicious. Some salt, you know, too. So all kinds of solutions out there for anything you need help with today.
And we've talked a lot about the fermented foods, which I know are a big part of the body ecology diet. What are some of the other pillars of that, or maybe things that are avoided in certain phases, things that are added in certain phases, or just some general guidelines there?
Okay, so let's say that you start eating young coconut kefir, and you notice anytime you have fermented foods, you bloat up. To me, that's like almost a diagnosis completely that you have SIBO or SIFO. So that's either a bacteria or fungus in the small intestine. So again, it's the same type of thing. You don't want the fermented foods then. go back and treat the gut, you know, take care of the SIBO, get rid of it. Then you would, and there's lots of help on how to do that today, of course, tons of wonderful podcasts and information online and everything, but that's what you have to do first, step by step, which is, by the way, one of the Body Ecology principles. Body Ecology is based on 7 principles. One of them is the principle of uniqueness. So today there's all these diets out there that look just like Body Ecology, like paleo and keto and bulletproof and everything. But the way they differ, most of them don't stress gut health and fermented foods and things like I do, and, you know, avoid high histamine foods and oxalates. They don't do that. But Body Ecology is kind of all those things. And again, that's where the principle of uniqueness comes in, because you might need to be more keto. But maybe if you're blood type A, A's don't handle a lot of fat. That is another chapter in my book. I'm a big believer in clues that come from your blood type that you should know about. And then and also you may not have the right enzymes for digesting the fat and the pancreatic enzymes, for example. So it's really, you know, you can't just put everybody in a keto diet for some reason and think they're going to do great on it. A is lack an enzyme called alkaline phosphatase in the small intestine. So they really don't do well in large amounts of fat at any one time. So I think that's where the principle of understanding that principle, applying it, you know, to our health and our diet and everything is really important to do these principles. So step by step is another one of my favorite, the two are my favorite. Step by step is really important. Because you don't just start here because you heard about something. You want to go back to the beginning. So you're heading on a journey. You're going to go to France or something. You got to start somewhere. Same with healing. You know, you got this problem. It's been identified. Your destination is to get rid of it. Where do you start? So step by step is really important.
And I will, of course, put links in the show notes so people can find it. We've talked a lot about your book. I'll make sure people can get directly to it. The show notes are wellnessmama.fm for all of you guys listening. This podcast is sponsored by Wellness. That's wellness with an E on the end. The brand I co-founded when I realized there just weren't truly natural alternatives to some personal care products that performed as well as many conventional brands. We've been sharing our popular toothpaste and hair care for almost 2 years, but today I'm excited to tell you about a new star in our lineup. The charcoal toothpaste that provides the same mineral-rich benefits as our original whitening formula with a boost of charcoal for extra whitening and mouth-supporting benefits. It's made without glycerin, using oral microbiome-friendly ingredients to help your body create stronger, healthier, whiter teeth while you sleep. I love to use charcoal and whitening toothpaste on alternating days to keep my teeth looking and feeling their best. You can check out our toothpaste and all of our products at wellness.com. That's WellNesse.com. This podcast is sponsored by Bio Optimizers and specifically their Magnesium Breakthrough product, which is their organic full spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium. Listen, if you feel stressed or have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep or never feel fully rested, one of the best things you could possibly do is start getting enough magnesium. I have been writing about magnesium for years, and that's because the body needs it for over 300 reactions. Yet the majority of us don't get anywhere near enough, and things like stress, caffeine, lack of sleep, and even certain foods can deplete us even further. But don't just run into the store and buy the first magnesium you find. Most magnesium supplements only use 1 or 2 of the cheapest synthetic forms. And since they're not full spectrum, they won't help your magnesium deficiency or help you sleep any better. There are actually 7 forms of magnesium. And for best results, you need all of them if you want to experience the full calming, sleep-enhancing effects. And that's why I'm taking Magnesium Breakthrough by Biooptimizers. You just take 2 capsules before you go to bed, and you'll be amazed at the effect it has on your stress, how much better you sleep, how much more rested you feel when you wake up, and you'll have so much more energy to enjoy your family the next day. I've had trouble with certain magnesium supplements over the years, and this is one that I feel a big difference from right away. For an exclusive offer just for you, go to magbreakthrough.com/wellnessmama and use the code wellnessmama to save 10% on Magnesium Breakthrough. So again, that's magbreakthrough.com/wellnessmama and the code wellnessmama. I know you also have a lot of other resources available, and you have been talking about this for a very long time and explaining this. Where else can people find you online?
Well, I think first start off by coming to the website and signing up for the newsletter, hopefully, and just following the work. I'm going to start doing more podcasts soon on a more regular basis like you're doing. I love them. When I get, I'm always nervous beforehand, and then I think, I'm not sure I can do these. But then afterwards, I'm thinking, oh, that was so much fun connecting with people like me, you know, that have some information to share. So if you sign up, you get notified about the podcast. We have lots and lots of information out there. We used to have a whole lot more, but we were one of those companies that got hit by Google, and they wiped all of our information out. It was pretty devastating about 2 years ago. We lost 93% of our traffic overnight, and I've kind of crawled back from there. But because we had, you know, well, for example, articles on autism, and they don't want that information out there. But I think that's a good place to start. The website is bodyecologydiet.com. I'm always kind of reluctant to promote our products, but they're excellent and they're really useful based on what we really need. For example, in talking about SIBO, for example, most of the time, about 80% of the time, same with urinary tract infections, the microbe that's causing the problem is E. coli. So we have a product called Ecophage. It is a phage, and it kills E. coli, and it's super effective. So many people, including myself, have benefited by starting off by taking, say, three of those twice a day, like a bedtime in the morning. And then after a while, you can cut way down to like two or even one a couple times a day. But here's why. Because phages go into the bloodstream, they look around for the E. coli, and then they penetrate it, and they use it, some of the DNA that the E. coli has, and they make more of it. And then they burst open the cell. Now they're everywhere in the bloodstream, and then they're attacking other E. coli. So before long, like a week or so, on a higher dose, you've got all these E. coli in there doing that job. But I really think phages are some, well, they're all different. They do different, they kill different things. But I think in this day and age, phages that kill E. coli are super, super great tool. Anyway, we do have products that I are all about healing the gut, you know, adding that inner ecosystem into place. We have the starter, you know, too. So
awesome. I'll put links to that as well so people can find them directly. And a couple last wrap-up questions. The first being, if there is a book or a number of books that have profoundly influenced your life, and if so, what they are and why?
There isn't one. I hate to say it. I wish I could come up with one, because so many great books coming out all the time. And some of them, I feel like, well, I already know that. But no, there's not just one. I think there's certain feels, like anything about the gut, particularly yeast and so on. I'm going to read that. There's just a lot of good ones out there. There's a plethora of them. I think that's a problem for authors, is there's so many. How can people, they're overwhelmed by them, which is why I think listening to podcasts is fantastic, even though I'm working on two books myself. I think podcasts are a great way to learn. And that's why I'm reading a book, I'm not reading scientific books for pleasure. I'm learning so I can help others.
I totally understand that. And lastly, any parting advice for the listeners could be related to this, everything we've talked about, or totally unrelated?
Oh, gosh. If we could just get the message out to young parents who are parents-to-be that autism is preventable. It is. I would love for them to know how simple it is to do that and how important it is to do that. It literally puts a baby on a course that they're happy and healthy for the rest of their lives. And we prevent so much heartache, especially for the child, but so many parents end up divorcing over this. We need to be focusing more on our children. They're our future. Everybody knows that, but they're really in trouble and they really need our help. So I would say that, please. Learn about bringing healthy babies into the world and what you have to do as soon as they get here. And what you do in the womb. You know, when I was studying child development in Georgia years ago, there wasn't a whole lot about prenatal information, but I was super interested in that. I would dig up anything I could find. And so now there's a lot, and so much happens in the womb. So much about like oh my gosh, even the way the baby looks and the way their brain develops and everything. So we need for mothers to be, even if the government, you know, gives kind of like a leave of absence to women to during that time that they're pregnant or about to get pregnant, even beforehand, you know, emphasize getting ready. And then during the pregnancy, really focus on taking care of the baby, getting lots of information, lots of support.
I think that's a perfect place to wrap up, and definitely a recurring theme from the physical side to have had people on to talk about the generational trauma and the mental, emotional side of that as well. And I think you're right. Anything we can do that supports mothers and supports children, it has those positive ripples throughout all of society. And for that reason, I'm so grateful for the work you're doing. And thank you for being here today and for educating us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. It was a pleasure. And thanks as always to all of you for listening and sharing your most valuable resources, your time, your energy, and your attention with us today. We're both so grateful that you did. And I hope that you will join me again on the next episode of the Wellness Mama podcast. If you're enjoying these interviews, would you please take 2 minutes to leave a rating or review on iTunes for me? Doing this helps more people to find the podcast, which means even more moms and families can benefit from the information. I really appreciate your time, and thanks as always for listening.